Oh my God, the legendary Judy Garland singing San Francisco. And speaking of legendary Judy Garlands, we are now joined by Cleve Jones up in San Francisco. Cleve, are you there?
I am.
Yeah, do you like being called legendary Judy Garland of San Francisco? Are you there, Cleve?
It seems like he dropped out.
I guess.
Here we go.
Okay.
Let's see.
Cleve, there you are.
Sorry about that.
No,
hi.
No problem. Here, I thought you hung up on me because I referred to you as Judy Garland.
Yeah, well, I'm Mike. How are you?
I am doing good. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, you know, I love and adore you, and I know, I think, just about almost everything to know about you because we go back a very long time. But I know that we have a lot of millennials who listen in, and even the generation right behind them who listen in, and they may not be as familiar with Cleve Jones. So I guess I got to go back to your days with Harvey Milk and how you got politically active and started in San Francisco.
Well, sure. I hitchhiked up to San Francisco from Phoenix when I got out of high school back in the early 1970s. And I had a pretty rough beginning. I was kind of a street kid and barely surviving. But I met some of the great heroes of our movement, women like Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon. And, of course, Harvey Milk, who mentored me and got me to cut my hair and stop selling weed and go to school. So I went to San Francisco City College first, and then San Francisco State. And I was going to be a film major, but Harvey looked at some of my work and told me that I had absolutely no talent and persuaded me to change my major and took me with him to City Hall when he was elected for an internship. So I got to work with him for 11 months until he was shot. And then that really sort of fixed my course, and I got very involved in politics.
You did. And I know you ran for San Francisco Board of Supervisors, right?
Yeah, way back in 92 when we still had citywide elections, I ran. And, you know, I came very close. We elected six. I came in seventh. I missed it by just a couple of hundred votes. But looking back, I think I'm grateful that I didn't win because as I was campaigning, I was getting sick. And shortly after that, I got very ill. And I was pretty much out of it for a couple of years until, thanks to ACT UP, as you well know, we were able to get expanded access to medications that were then in clinical trials. And that's what really saved my life. So when I wrote my book, When We Rise, I started by saying the movement saved my life. And that's not rhetoric. That's not hyperbole. I would not be speaking with you today if it wasn't for the hard work and courage of so many activists over so many decades.
Well, you and me both. You know, I was ACT UP's lawyer here in Los Angeles during the late 80s, but I, too, got very sick in 93 and thought that I was like a lemming about to go over the cliff with everybody else due to HIV. And then protease inhibitors hit, and I didn't. I'm still here.
Yeah,
still here. The AIDS quilt. I mean, I think so many people know the story of the NAMES Project, and I know the story, but can you just reflect on that for just a bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to, and unfortunately, I think most young people are not aware of it because it's kind of been rendered invisible in recent years. I'm hoping to change that. But I had the idea for the quilt at a candlelight memorial for Harvey Milk back in 1985 when the death toll in my city, San Francisco, had just reached 1,000. And if you could imagine, I'm sure many of your listeners have been to the Castro area of San Francisco. Ultimately, we lost over 20,000 of my immediate neighbors in this this very tight, cohesive neighborhood. And back in 85, when the death toll hit 1,000, I was very struck by that figure. So at the annual candlelight tribute to Harvey Milk and George Moscone, I asked people to carry signs with the names of their loved ones who had already died due to HIV/AIDS. And at the conclusion of the annual walk, we climbed up on ladders and covered the federal building with these placards with these names. And I looked at that patchwork and I thought, it looks like some kind of quilt. And I thought of my grandma, my great grandma back in Indiana, and the quilt stayed sewn. And ultimately, it became the world's largest community arts project. And the last time it was displayed in its entirety back in 1996. We covered the National Mall from that great expanse of lawn all the way from the steps of the Capitol to the Washington Monument. It was an extraordinary work of art and a great political statement, and really helped, I think, change the hearts and minds of the American people and the way they looked at HIV and people who were suffering.
Yeah, I think it brought in a lot of allies. I mean, I know here in West Hollywood, we lost 10,000 people between 1981 and about 1994. And for a small town like West Hollywood to lose 10,000, it felt like a bomb dropped. But what really happened is so many new people got involved, moms, siblings, college schoolmates, people who did not identify as LGBTQ suddenly came to stitch a quilt. And that was the introduction.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that, John, because it's one of the things that I'm most proud of and most grateful for. We started the quilt about the same time that ACT UP started. And those of us on the left politically, and those of us who were LGBTQ and already radicalized, you know, we were already involved. But that was a movement that needed to grow. And I think this is true of all movements, that once they stop growing, they start to lose ground pretty fast. But I knew we couldn't win this battle on our own. And I think that the quilt opened the door for other people to participate. And hundreds of thousands of people chose to walk through that door via the quilt and take up roles in activism and caregiving. And I think it made a huge difference.
Yeah, I do too. Look, when I saw the movie Milk, which, and Sean Penn playing Harvey, and the gorgeous actor playing you, I thought, look, I wonder what Cleve's thinking. A little kid from Indiana, you know, raised in Arizona, watching this actor play him in an Oscar-winning movie.
You know, I had a bit of a say in who portrayed me, and I had just seen Emile Hirsch in Into the Wild, which Sean Penn had directed. And I thought Emile was just so incredibly talented and also, you know, absolutely adorable. And he did a really amazing job. My parents were still alive when the film premiered, and I got to bring my whole family to the Castro Theater. And my mom went up to Emile and said, you look like Cleve, you walk like Cleve, you talk like Cleve. How do you do that? I'm an actor.
That's amazing. Did you talk to Dustin Lance Black, the writer of Milk, a great deal in preparing the script for the movie?
Of course. And that project originally began, the original notion was actually a musical. A mutual friend of Dustin Lance Black's and mine named Damon Intrabartolo. And some of your listeners may remember, he did a beautiful off-Broadway piece called Bear. And he had this idea of a musical about my friendship with Harvey. And he brought in Lance to work on the book so he could focus on the music. Well, that didn't go anywhere. But in the meantime, I had taken Lance to San Francisco and introduced him to all of the people who knew Harvey who are still around. So he'd amassed quite a bit of material, and he did the script, and we took it to Gus Van Sant, and he agreed to direct. So it was quite an adventure, and I am so grateful for that. And you know, Sean Penn, his portrayal of Harvey was so spot on. There were so many times during production when my hair just stood on end. It was just uncanny how he didn't just pretend to be Harvey. He sort of channeled Harvey in a way that was amazingly powerful.
Hey, Cleve, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of the LGBTQ movement, if you don't mind. So just holding on for a quick commercial break. Thank you all for tuning in to Sidebar with John Duran. We'll be right back here on Channel Q. Thank you, Jason. Rise up. Cleve, I picked that song for you, given your new book, When We Rise, which is phenomenal, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome. You know, a lot of young people come into the show, and I'm so inspired by them because they're just as angry as I think you and I were at one time. I've mellowed a bit. But, I think when we get a little older, like you and me, we have the perspective.
A lot older.
Okay, don't rub it in. But we get the perspective of having some life lessons that we've learned along the way. And what would you say to the young LGBTQ activists out there who are probably enraged with Trumpism and its impact, especially in our trans community, and wanting to look to you as an elder to say, what do we do?
Well, what I usually say to young people is that I'm quite sure that each and every one of them has some special gift that they can bring to our struggle for justice. And what I would encourage them to do is to find some way of contributing that also brings them joy. I love what I do. And because of that, I have endured over the decades. And I think that people look at me and look at my work and they say, this guy loves what he does. Some things take a very long time to achieve, and no victory is ever permanent. We always have to be on guard. We always have to be pushing the envelope. So my suggestion to young people is to look within yourself and be attentive to those little clues that appear that can show you what is that special gift that you bring. Maybe you're a caregiver. Maybe you're a media person. Maybe you're a researcher. Maybe you're an inspirational speaker. Maybe you're a political strategist. But every one of you has something that you can bring to this. And if you love what you do, then you can sustain the work year after year after year.
Oh, that's beautiful. I noticed, a lot of the work you're doing now with Unite Here, and I think the relationship we have with labor goes all the way back to Harvey and the Coors Beer boycott. Can you talk a little bit about your work with labor and Unite Here, and maybe even a bit about the Coors boycott way back when?
Yes, the Coors Beer boycott, I'm glad you brought that up. Often I hear young people say, well, boycotts don't work. Well, actually, boycotts can be extremely effective. I think of the Montgomery bus boycott that was launched by Rosa Parks, for example, or the grape and lettuce boycotts launched by Cesar Chavez. But back in the 70s, we teamed up with the Teamsters of all unions. And we got Coors Beer out of every gay bar in North America. And this was before the internet, by the way, because Coors had racist and homophobic anti-union policies. The Coors family was a notoriously right-wing extremist family funding all sorts of crazy people. It was a powerful boycott that took a huge chunk of their market share. And to this day, that company, which is now merged with another, feels obliged to make contributions to the community because of that. So that was pioneered by Morris Kite in L.A. and Harvey Milk in San Francisco and a wonderful gay labor activist here in San Francisco named Howard Wallace. I was already a supporter of unions, but for the last 15 years, I've been working with the hotel workers. The people I work for are mostly immigrants, mostly women. Think of the women that clean the rooms in the hotels you folks stay in. Think of the people that put the food on the airplanes, workers in food service, the casinos on the strip in Las Vegas. That's who I work for. And I love the work because one thing that drives me nuts right now is people spend a lot of time talking about talking. And they spend a lot of time talking about our vocabulary and how many initials to add to the acronym and how many stripes to add to the flag. In my union, we negotiate contracts through collective bargaining that protect transgender workers from discrimination on the job in places like Georgia and Texas and Florida. And we provide them with the health care that they so desperately need. So in my union, we see that we are delivering really substantive results to folks that can transform their lives. We recently concluded a very long, intense strike against the Marriott Corporation, it is now the world's largest hotel company. And at the end of that, after thousands of workers walked off the job in eight cities, some of those workers ended up with a 40% pay increase and reduced workload, better health care, and women employees were given panic buttons, GPS-based panic buttons, to help protect them from the appalling level of sexual abuse and assault that those women experience while doing their jobs that are already tough. So I love the work, and I love the alliance between LGBTQ and labor. It's a powerful coalition and really winning important victories.
I wonder if you would comment on Nancy Pelosi. So Speaker Pelosi, representing San Francisco, seems to be the antidote, at least at the moment, for Donald Trump. And I know we've had both good and bad happen with Nancy Pelosi over the years, but what would you say about what's happening in Washington right now, the struggle for power?
Well, you know, I've disagreed with Speaker Pelosi on a number of issues over the decades, but she's a brilliant woman. And I think what we're seeing right now is that she's closing in for the kill. And I know that many people wanted to see new blood in the leadership, and I was among them. But in terms of this particular woman, Nancy Pelosi is, in my view, the ideal person to be in that position right now. And I think that the weeks ahead are going to be fascinating. I should also say, full disclosure, that Nancy Pelosi was one of the very, very first people to embrace the concept of the AIDS Memorial Quilt. She actually held the very first fundraiser for the NAMES Project in her home. And without her, we would never have been able to get permission from the National Park Service to display the quilt. So I consider her a friend, an ally, and I'm glad that she's the one that is sort of the tip of the spear as we fight back against Trump and everything that he represents.
Yeah, I agree. Our trans community seems to be bearing the brunt of Trumpism right now. Any message you give to members of our trans community who are out there listening who are feeling like they've got a big red target square on their back?
Well, they do, and they should be very concerned. We should all be very concerned. But I think trans people should also be celebrating how far they've come just in the last decade. I think it's quite remarkable, actually, how successful their part of our movement has been. But there's something even more frightening to me than Trump, or maybe, let me rephrase that, more complicated than Trump. Trump is a pretty clear evil, and I think most of us have already figured out what we're doing to fight back against him. But there's something else I'd like your listeners to think about, and that's the demise of the gayborhoods. And this has sort of been glossed over with kind of trivial stories about straight people coming into gay bars and that kind of nonsense. But the reality is that the gay bars are going away. In San Francisco, finally, a lesbian venue has reopened after years without one. We have probably maybe a third as many gay LGBT venues as we had when I got here in the 70s. But the reality is that the gayborhoods are going away. And some people say that's because of technology, that because of Grindr and Tinder, we don't need these physical meeting spaces. Some people say it's because we're so accepted everywhere, we can live anywhere we want. But I think the reality is that the very rich are taking the inner cities, and it's a complete reversal of the role that inner cities have played for generations in this country. The inner cities were where the refugees landed, the recent immigrants, the bohemians, the gays, the artists, and now it's so expensive. So in my town, the gayborhood is going away, and the same thing is happening in your town. It's happening in Seattle. It's happening in London. It's happening in Washington and Philadelphia. And when we lose those gayborhoods, it's not just about losing gay bars. It's about losing the political power that comes when we're concentrated in certain precincts and districts, the ability to elect our own and defeat our enemies. We also lose that amazing cultural vitality that happens when we're inhabiting the same space. And here in San Francisco, you know, I don't want to brag on us too much, but my neighborhood produced the first gay synagogue, the first gay chorus, the rainbow flag, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, the AIDS Memorial Quilt. It's because we were living together and collaborating. And then thirdly, when we lose the gayborhoods, we lose the ability to provide the specialized social services most urgently required by the most vulnerable among us, particularly transgender people, our young people, our senior citizens, people living with HIV/AIDS. Those folks need specialized social services, medical care, psychological support. And when we lose the neighborhoods, we lose the ability to provide that. So I hope that any young people that are listening might start thinking about the change that's going to come. We've seen extraordinary change in the last 50 years since Stonewall. We're going to see that change be even more complicated and accelerated in the 50 years ahead. What are the institutions and organizations and strategies that will continue our growth even as we are increasingly dispersed due to gentrification and the displacement that follows?
Cleve, you have just given us a topic to have you come back, and I'm going to bring somebody from the Village in New York and me. The three of us are going to have a conversation about protecting the neighborhoods. We've got to cut it off now because we've got to go to the top of the hour. But thank you, Cleve Jones, for joining us. My hero, I love you. Thank you for all of your great work and service to our community. Hope to see
thank
you again
you,
soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to us here, Sidebar with John Duran on Channel Q.